Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Breakdown here on a Sunday night. We're doing it live on Twitter Spaces, and we're expecting that we're probably going to have a little bit of a conversation tonight. We have had at least one person who said that they're going to do the very, very best to join us towards the end of our countdown, and there's been some stuff. We took last week off, and we took it off because things were a little hectic. We did a three-episode series on the NDP and some problems that they're having. And at the same time as all of that was going on, we were trying to keep up with everything else. So we took last Sunday off for our live show, but we are back this week. And what a week to come back on. There have been some developments. There have been so many developments, and we're going to try to work our way through some of the bigger ones, a couple of the smaller ones that maybe fell through the cracks, maybe by design. And if at any point anybody wants to weigh in, we would love to hear from you. So the rules of engagement for the show are, as always, if you think that we've gotten something wrong, if you think that you have a different perspective that you'd like to offer, we would absolutely love to hear from you. That being said, we won't tolerate any kind of hate speech, and it's not a parade, so leave your manure spreaders at home. And with that, let's get started. So there's no way to start the conversation on Alberta politics this week, unfortunately, by not talking about anything other than Alberta politics. We have to talk about some American politics first. One of the things that a lot of people have been expecting for quite some time because of a leaked document a few weeks ago is that the Supreme Court of the United States of America was going to overturn Roe versus Wade. If by some chance you are not familiar with what Roe versus Wade means in the United States, it was the decision that guaranteed that women in the States would have access to healthcare. I mean, some people like to say women in the States would have access to abortion, but the bottom line is this: abortion is absolutely healthcare. And there have been a lot of people for a long time who, for a lot of different reasons, have done their very, very best, not just in the States, but in other places as well, to limit women's access to healthcare, to abortions. And what we saw this week was the culmination of an effort that has gone on for a very, very long time. Likely since Roe versus Wade was first a thing, to get rid of it. It's very well documented, and it's very well known that there was a concerted effort by people to influence and to make choices for judges on the Supreme Court in such a way that they would be ideologically biased and that they would overturn some of these court decisions. Roe versus Wade, obviously one of the biggest ones, but there's other ones. And that's really, really important to highlight. So this isn't a Supreme Court in the United States that is just going after Roe versus Wade and then they're done. We're about to see, in all likelihood, a bunch of other decisions from the Supreme Court. Some of the things that have been talked about include things like gay marriage. Some of them include things that are going to affect lots of LGBTQ2S+ people. And there is a concerted movement by the conservative right in the United States to do very, very real damage to what's going on in a lot of people's lives in the States because of their own moral beliefs, religious beliefs. And that's the thing that's happened. So Roe versus Wade has been overturned in the United States. And as much as there are people who are saying, and from a purely technical standpoint at this point in time, that, well, it's an American court decision, it doesn't affect what happens here in Canada, there's no reason for people to be upset about it, that's simply not true. And the example that we used earlier this week is the fact that if you go, or if you've driven past, or if you live in downtown Calgary, for example, you've seen the anti-vax, anti-health restrictions, convoys moving through the streets. If you've ever been around any of those convoys, you know there are American flags all over the place. If you've ever been to any of their events in the park or occupations or whatever we want to call them, you know that they have huge tents that they're setting up where they're talking about how we have to defend our Second Amendment rights in Canada. And I'm sorry, that's just not a thing. Where they're talking about the fact that we should be joining the United States. Anybody who says that what happens in the States doesn't affect Canada is being disingenuous. And while this legal ruling doesn't immediately have any impact in Canada, we have certainly seen a lot of conversations start up over the last week. Some of those conversations are going to be part of our countdown of our biggest stories. But it's really important to set that context first, because especially here in Alberta, there's an event coming up. If you've been paying any attention to Alberta politics over the last little while, you know that the Premier of Alberta, Jason Kenney, squeaked by on a leadership review and then shortly after announced that he would be resigning as Premier of Alberta and leader of the United Conservative Party. That has in turn triggered a leadership race. And whoever wins that leadership race is going to end up being the Premier of Alberta for at least 6 months. At a minimum, it's going to be 6 months. Now, there's some people who are saying, well, maybe they'll push the fixed election date back. That's a possibility. They could do that. They probably won't, but they could. But even then, as we saw from the UCP's first little tenure there, they can do a lot in 6 months. Take a look at what they did to GSAs. That took less than 6 months. There's a lot that can happen in 6 months with a new premier. And the Roe versus Wade controversy has very much framed a lot of the conversations that we've seen in Alberta politics over the last week. And some of those things have gotten really, really big. Now, before we get too far into the UCP leadership, the state of the current UCP leadership, as well as some of the other stories that are related to it, we want to lay something very clearly out on the table. And we've announced this elsewhere, but because of some of the events of the week, we want to make sure that we're crystal clear on this. So when the UCP leadership race was first announced, we said that we would invite every single UCP leadership race candidate onto the show for a candid conversation. Now, we've already released one of those conversations, one of those interviews, and it was with a candidate that many people find, for a lot of good reason, to be a little bit more on the controversial side, and that was Bill Rock. It was a civil conversation. We were very polite with each other. Things didn't go off the rails, despite obviously some major differences of political viewpoint and opinion. But one of the reasons why we wanted to start with that one was because we wanted to demonstrate the importance of being able to have civil conversations with people. And we extended almost a little bit over a week ago now that invitation. We emailed all of the UCP leadership candidates. We said, hey, we'd love it if you would come on the show. Let us know. We've heard from two. One of them, obviously, Bill Rock. The other one was Leela Ahir. And we'll be dropping her interview a little bit later on in the week. We will not be interviewing Brian Jean. And we'll talk a little bit more as to why we won't be interviewing Brian Jean. To be clear, we would be happy to have Brian Jean on the show, but because of some of the things that happened this week, we've been told unequivocally in no uncertain terms, with a healthy dollop of F-bombs, that Mr. Jean will not be appearing on our show. We have some other plans, though. So stick around for that. But there have been some major developments in the UCP leadership race. One of the biggest ones has to be the revelation, the decision that despite going to the UCP caucus and the UCP's election committee for a waiver to allow her to run, Michelle Rempel declined to run in the UCP leadership race. Now, there's been a lot of speculation as to the reasons, but the bottom line is Michelle Rempel-Gardner was very, very clear with what her reasons were. She put up a multi-page statement, letter, rant, I don't know what you'd call it, where she talked about the fact that she would not be running for the UCP leadership primarily because the caucus is so divided. She doesn't see a policy pathway to unity, and nobody could recommend a policy pathway to unity before the next election. There's too much division. There's too much anger. There's too much distrust. She did not see, nor did any of her advisors apparently, see a way that she would be able to lead that party to success in the next election without the division getting worse. Now, there's a lot of people that would argue that is the net result of taking the Wild Rose and the Progressive Conservative Party and just kind of smashing them together and hoping for the best peanut butter and jelly mix. But as we saw, with even Mr. Kenny wasn't able to keep that division from forming and driving huge wedges in his own party. A seasoned politician like Michelle Rempel Garner took a look at the situation and she said, oh, wow, nope. Nope, 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 not for me. And it's worth noting that the caucus meeting that the conversation happened at with all of the MLAs that were discussing whether or not she should run. To be clear, it's the election committee that got to make that decision whether or not to give her the waiver. But it's a point of, I guess, courtesy to have that conversation with the MLAs. There were apparently 17 MLAs who attended that meeting. 13 said, oh, we don't want her running. She shouldn't get an exemption. Which is fascinating because it's also been reported that there's another candidate who is currently trying to get an exemption, and he has 10 MLAs who have signed a letter saying that he should be able to run. That's somebody who used to be the leader of the Liberal Party, Roz Sherman. Now, we don't know how that's going to play out yet. But it's fascinating that Roz Sherman was able to get 10 MLAs to say, you know what, he should do it. And 13 MLAs in the meeting on Michelle Rempel Garner said they didn't believe that she should. And I think that only underscores just how bad and how deep that division runs. There's been a lot of other speculation as to who's going to be jumping into the race. There's been rumors circulating for months that ex-Justice Minister Casey Medu was looking at a leadership run. And then we had on a CBC podcast this week, somebody who is very well connected in the political circles, Rishi Nagar, said that he was aware of there was another person who was looking at running. It's going to be a BIPOC man. Nobody knows who Rishi was referring to for sure. The other co-hosts on that podcast did the very best that they could to try to get confirmation. And Rishi stuck to his guns. He's obviously protecting somebody's confidence, and that good for him for doing that. But there's other people who are going to still be entering the race, apparently. One of the big things, though, that happened in regards to the UCP leadership race, though, was the leadership candidate panel that was hosted on Thursday night. And that's where we got to see, I mean, to be clear, the panel was hosted by an organization that is advocating very strongly for greater Alberta sovereignty, I suppose, if I'm to use the couched language that everybody likes to use. That's the organization that hosted it. So obviously it was going to be a little bit more of a, let's go with polarized conversation. All of the leadership candidates attended except for one, and that was Bill Rock, who we spoke to last week. Bill wasn't invited because he is not a sitting MLA, nor has he ever been. Everybody else who was there was, so they got to speak. And they answered a bunch of different questions. And some of those answers drew a lot of attention. We're going to start first, though, with the answer that didn't actually get that much attention. One of the topics that came up was the question of a provincial police force. And there were some candidates that were kind of waffly about it, but there were some candidates that were really, really clear about what their feelings were. The first clip that we're going to play for you is from none other than Danielle Smith. And she talks about why she wants a provincial police force. And it's pretty chilling.
We don't have the power to direct the RCMP quite clearly from the historical precedent. The only way we have the power to say we will not enforce that is to have a provincial police that answers to us, that responds to our policing priority, and an Alberta Sovereignty Act where we've given notice that we will not enforce laws that violate our jurisdiction. We don't have...
Now, never mind the fact that that Alberta Sovereignty Act that she's proposing would actually be a violation of Alberta's jurisdiction in the first place, because the act that Danielle Smith proposed talked about the idea that it would give Alberta the power to pick and choose what federal laws the province of Alberta is going to follow. Now, this is something that has been largely panned universally by not only constitutional scholars, but lawyers as well. The AB Law blog from the University of Calgary came out and condemned it in some of the harshest terms I've ever seen come out of that blog, where they were very, very clear that not only would it not survive a Supreme Court challenge, but it would cause real harm to the legal structure and the legal framework that exists within Alberta. Now, other candidates who are present at that forum also pointed out that it would also cause a whole lot of economic uncertainty, because who's going to come to a province and invest and build their businesses in a province when the premier of Alberta, if it was Danielle Smith and she did go ahead with this Alberta Sovereignty Act, she might just pick and choose what rules she wants to follow. She might just change the rules because it's Tuesday. Who knows? It doesn't make for a very stable business environment. But that wasn't the comment that came out of that whole situation that got the most attention. The comment that got the most attention came from Brian Jean. Mr. Jean was asked several questions in regards to pipelines and in regards to the clip that we're going to play for you right here, in regards to internet censorship. And his response to internet censorship and how it can be dealt with and addressed is pretty chilling given the events of the week.
We need to make sure that we have a conservative prime minister that makes the right choices for the Supreme Court, which is ultimately what has been ignored by many conservative governments. I'm sorry, but it has, and it needs to be thought of at the forefront and the background of any decision you make. We need to stop the Supreme Court from weakening people's rights. That means electing a conservative prime minister for certain and working towards that, and understanding that selecting judges and the Supreme Court judges are the most important thing we can do as a premier, a prime minister, to have that influence on getting that done. So we have people that align with their thoughts.
And it's that align with our thoughts piece that scared and upset a lot of people, not just in Alberta, but across Canada. Because what Mr. Jean is referring to there is the idea of, we need to, instead of having an independent judiciary that's supposed to, and in Canada, to be clear, historically has done a very good job of weighing cases that are put in front of them on the basis of their merit, on the basis of facts. Well, here's Mr. Jean in that clip and at other points in that panel as well, advocating for making sure the judges that are appointed are of the same thoughts as conservative prime ministers and conservative premiers. This is why we opened the show talking about Roe v. Wade and talking about the fact that Roe v. Wade is the culmination of years and years of work in the United States to influence who's on the bench of the Supreme Court and to influence what their decisions are. Now, to be clear, Mr. Jean was not speaking about abortion. He was just talking about using the exact same tactics to advance socially conservative values. That's what he was talking about, but he wasn't specifically referring to abortion. And this leads us to why Mr. Jean won't be appearing on our show. We received a phone call yesterday from Mr. Jean's campaign manager, media manager. And apparently, now we haven't seen any of these things ourselves, but apparently Mr. Jean received some very graphic, very violent threats. Now, to be clear, we don't need to see those threats ourselves in order to go, it is unacceptable that anybody should be the target of violent threats. You don't need to have the actual example in front of you to say nobody should be threatened with violence. Nobody should be threatened or have their family threatened with sexual assault or rape. That is unacceptable under all circumstances, full stop. But we were also told that in the view of Mr. Jean's campaign, because we shared the clip of Mr. Jean talking about wanting to stack the Supreme Court, that we were responsible for issuing, for those threats being issued. And because we were responsible for those threats being issued, even though they did not come from anyone on our team, they didn't come from anyone even affiliated from our team. And again, we haven't seen those threats. We did encourage the campaign manager to release those threats so people can see how dangerous this conversation actually is. We did encourage that campaign manager to absolutely contact the police. But in the eyes of the Brian Jean campaign, apparently we're responsible for people being so outraged that Mr. Jean would suggest that the courts be stacked in like-minded conservative views. And so we have been told in no uncertain terms, some colorful language maybe, that Mr. Jean won't be appearing on our show. And quite frankly, we're disappointed by that because we would have welcomed the opportunity to have a very calm, very respectful conversation, just like we had with Bill Rock. But apparently Mr. Jean doesn't feel that, I guess, he's up for that, or that we're deserving of that conversation, which is really unfortunate, because it would be, there have been a lot of people who have been calling for Mr. Jean to clarify his views on abortion, particularly in Canada. There's been a lot of people who have been calling for Mr. Jean to clarify what exactly he meant by his statements on the courts. To our eyes, we haven't seen any of that yet. We'd love to. So if you see any stories, please kick it our way. Moving on from there, though, to something a little bit lighter, and we're probably going to go past the 8:30 mark tonight, as you could tell, because we've got so much to talk about and so much of it is so big. But moving on to a little bit of a lighter thing, Mr. Kenny did what by any reasonable measure can only be called the quietest cabinet appointments in the history of almost everything. Just a few days ago on June 21st. So one of the things that has happened with the UCP leadership race is because there's so many people who are running for the UCP leadership race who were cabinet ministers, there's been a lot of vacant spots. And Mr. Kenny has had to fill those spots. Now, normally when somebody's appointed to be a cabinet minister, there's a lot of pomp and ceremony. There's usually a Your Alberta live stream. There's opportunities for journalists to speak with the new ministers and ask them the directions that they want to take things and all of that. And there's a lot of parading around and all of the things. None of the things happened. It was announced largely by a later in the day press release and then followed up by a later in the day at around 4 o'clock, 4:15, series of tweets where Jason Kenney announced who his new cabinet ministers are. So the new cabinet ministers, Jason Nixon has been moved away from Parks, and he is now the president of the Treasury Board and the Minister of Finance. Whitney Issick is now the Minister of Alberta Environment and the Parks. Matt Jones is now the Minister of Children's Services. Prasad Panda has taken over the Ministry of Transportation. Nick Milliken, who we affectionately refer to as S Club here on the show, he's now the Minister of Infrastructure. Jackie Armstrong-Hominick is the Associate Minister of Status of Women. And our favorite one, Brad Rutherford, is the Minister of Nothing. He is Minister without Portfolio. Now, he still gets the pay raise that comes with being a minister, and he still gets the lifetime honorific of being referred to as the Honorable Brad Rutherford till he's dead, and then probably on his tombstone as well, because the UCP changed the rules in regards to who had to be called honorable, which made for some fun with our conversation with the previous NDP MLA. But it was very unusual, those cabinet appointments, because they went completely against the normal way that cabinet appointments would happen. It was very quiet. Like we said, no ceremony. And we now have a minister of nothing. I would argue he should be the minister of pay raises, but what do I know? And our last story that we wanted to hit on for sure has to do, and we're going to catch some heat on this, I'm sure, but it has to be talked about. It has to do with the NDP. So there's been a lot of controversy over the last couple of weeks with the NDP. Well, I shouldn't say last couple of weeks, months, and by some arguments based on our conversation with two ex-NDP MLAs, one of whom was a minister. There's been a lot of conversation in regards to the power structure and power abuses inside of the NDP. And there's very clearly a lot of people who don't want to have that conversation. But one of the things that's come up has to do with the question of vetting. Now, we've had conversations with a couple of women over the last couple of weeks who have addressed the fact and raised the concern that they wanted to run for the NDP, and their vetting process took a spectacularly long time, upwards of a year. And we've been told that there are some people who wanted to run, and their vetting actually took longer than a year. Now, if you take a look at the NDP constitution, the document that gives the NDP all of the power that they have to do the things that they do inside of their party, and if you take a look at their bylaws, there is absolutely nothing in those bylaws or in that constitution that allows for a vetting process to even happen. Now, we're not making the argument by any stretch of the imagination that vetting shouldn't happen, because we've seen that if we don't have a robust vetting process, we can have people who get in who have some problems. We saw early in the week, there was somebody who ran for the Alberta Party who had left a job because they were having inappropriate relationships with minors under their care. Somehow, that didn't get caught in the vetting process for the Alberta Party. It should have been. I think most people would agree on that. But it doesn't change the fact that it wasn't. That being said, if you take a look at the Alberta Party's constitution or the UCP's constitution, there's a very clear framework by which the vetting process can happen and by which candidates can be refused. If you take a look at what are the requirements for being a candidate under the NDP constitution, it really just boils down to, are you a member? Have you done the paperwork? And there's probably really good arguments for having a democratic system that's accessible to anybody who wants to show up. We're not saying that's a bad thing. But when you see internal party organizers, and there's been some pretty serious allegations laid against some of these organizers and the bullying and toxic atmosphere. When you see those organizers using a vetting process to keep people from running, it's very hard to marry those two things. It's very hard to pair. You have an open democratic process that's available to anyone who wants to show up with, we're going to stall you under vetting for as long as we need to, until maybe you get discouraged and just go away. Those two things don't square. Especially when, if you take a look at what the vetting requirements actually are, the time period that's required for somebody to put their nomination papers in before the nomination meeting, the maximum required time, the shortest notice that you can give the NDP, if you want to run to be a candidate and you meet all of the requirements, is 21 days. As long as you provide all of the notification 21 days before that nomination meeting, you are, under the NDP constitution, allowed to run as a candidate. Which implies that the process of vetting a candidate, the process of making all of those determinations, should take no longer than 21 days. And yet there are stories after stories after stories of people being excluded from the nomination process by the vetting process, which again, there's no framework for. There's nothing that allows for it. Now, what's fascinating is there was a story that came out just a couple days ago that talked about almost the exact same problems, except it wasn't the Alberta NDP, it was the Ontario NDP. And they were being put under the microscope because they failed to make any gains in the recent provincial election in Ontario. But it really does force the question, why is this such a consistent problem across the NDP? Now, in fairness, Rachel Notley has said that they're going to take steps to address these issues. But it leaves us with the question, what kind of steps can you take to address an issue that doesn't actually technically exist within your framework? I don't know the answer to that one. If anybody who's listening tonight would like to weigh in with any comments, any observations, we would love nothing more than to hear from you. And I may just go ahead. I see somebody out there in the audience tonight. I was just going to put her on the spot, but she just requested it, so I can't put her on the spot anymore. We have somebody with us who's the campaign manager for one of the UCP candidates. Sarah Biggs.
Hi.
How's it going?
Hi.
How are you doing tonight?
Oh, you know, I'm sure making a few brain explodes these days. It's work is keeping me busy. I'm sure
I
surprised
bet.
A few by my choosings last week.
But I mean, here's the thing that I'd like to talk to you a bit about, yeah. Sarah, tonight, because I think that it's particularly relevant, and I kind of ranted about it at the beginning.
Yeah,
we are in a unique position in Alberta right now, where we are going to be choosing. Sorry, the UCP and UCP members are going to be choosing the next premier of Alberta for the next 6 months. And that's something that, even though it's an internal UCP process, that's something that is going to unquestionably affect everybody who lives in the province. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can understand, knowing you, why you would want to be engaged in that process. But that's not the reaction that you've been getting from people.
No. You know, I know people are upset. I know the UCP can be very, you know, it's not good right now. You look at everything that's happening. But, you know, and I'm not trying to sell my case or sell my candidate here. I'm just trying to explain my reasoning. And, you know, I shouldn't be, like, in theory, we shouldn't be in a position where someone should be explaining their choices. But I think it's time for us to get involved, and, you know, the change happens from within. And I think we, you know, when I was approached to lead this campaign, talked to my husband about it, to my daughter about it, and they were like, well, you know what, you have the chance to change things, how things are in the province, right? And, you know, I've seen a lot of flashback on the stance on abortion that the candidate took on Friday. But for everyone who knows me, they know that I was a staunch lobbyist for Bill 17. And, you know, we're like, everything is so divided, Nate. I never, maybe I was a little naive about the whole thing, expecting, you know, I didn't expect everybody supporting me in that choice. Like, it would be ludicrous. But the kind of lashback that I've received in the past few days, I'm like, okay, well, it's part of the game. But, you know, at the end of the day, for people who know me, I'm a dead right-on centrist. I am a centrist. And I come in with a centrist mentality, and I'm trying to make things better at the end of the day. It's been quite interesting. It's been very eye-opening, and I'm dealing with a lot of very strong worded emails every day. And I'm not going to read them to you guys because it's extremely difficult to read.
Well, as long as you don't blame us for them.
No, I'm not blaming you guys.
Because that's in fashion this week, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody... you know, at the beginning, if you can't understand what you're saying yourself, you're in a little bit of trouble, right? You know, we had the, how do you call it? The Free Alberta Strategy, the Independent, how do you call it?
Yeah,
I didn't even bother. Yeah, and we didn't play footsies with them last week. You know, we took our stance and we're like, no, we're not. No, just no. And I think we're going to be, you know, keeping our head down and just really trying. At the end of the day, if I can change the conversation and how, well, you know, we're going to be better for it, right?
I got to ask. I'm going to jump in there.
Yeah.
One of the things that's fascinating to me, and I'd love to hear what sort of as much as you can say, because there is a campaign on. But I'd love to hear what, I mean, we saw the Roe v. Wade situation come up. Your candidate was the first, and by most measures, the only candidate until real journalists started asking all the other candidates and calling them. Your candidate was the first to come out with a statement that made their position clear on Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
It was not a position that a lot of people, I mean, we've seen even just today, the pictures have been circulating of the fact that Travis Taves is endorsed and encouraged. People are being encouraged to vote from a very pro-life anti-women's healthcare.
I think I sent you that one.
It was circulating around. I saw it a couple of places. But Mr. Taves is being actively endorsed by this anti-abortion, anti-women's healthcare group.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really been super forthcoming on what his position is. And that's a position that a lot of people do associate with the UCP, because we've got people like Dan D. Williams, who talks about conscience rights.
Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Kenny has his own... I'll just say very gross history with anti-abortion advocacy.
Yeah.
So it is a perception that a lot of people do have of conservatives, and a lot of people do have of the UCP. And it was fascinating to me to watch the backlash that your candidate got from people who are advocating for women's right to access healthcare. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, but we don't like you, even though you're doing exactly the thing that we've been asking conservatives do. So I'm curious if you guys have a strategy. How do you bridge that gap? Do you have a strategy for convincing moderates, if I can use that word, that you mean it?
It's going to be showing on the strategies we're going to be, and on the policies we're going to be putting out. It's going to be embedded in our message. And you know, the thing that we need to understand is that when we really should give a party politics 101 crash course, because a lot of people very often they say, well, you didn't speak up then. But there's a thing in the party, it's called a whip. So very often you are being forced, whipped into following the party line. Or often they give them the choice to vote against, or if you don't want to vote against it, walk away. You're not allowed to vote in favor. So, you know, that's one thing. There's always two sides to a story. There's a lot of conversation that has been, like I said, everything is so polarized that it's extremely difficult to try to control our narrative on the matter. But I think we've been doing okay. But you know, if you notice, Nate, when we were doing our podcast together before Christmas, we were saying that Mr. Here got the power haircut, right?
You did see that one. I gotta ask, because did you know then? Were you just kind of flexing and being subtle about it?
No, or no. So what happened? So I'm gonna give you guys a story. I was hired to go cover the conservative leadership debate in Edmonton by French CBC. So I was in Edmonton that day. Bill 17 was voted unanimously in the House, Lila, because those debates are the conservative who's who, right? It's, and she looked at me, she was like, Sarah, your bill went in. And I was like, oh my God, like everybody, they were whipped. Even Dan Williams, Getsons and all that, you know, they were whipped and told to vote in favor of that bill, even if they cringed a lot. And then she was like, we should talk. And I was like, okay. So we started talking and talking and talking. And I was like, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And we were aligning on a lot of things. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to be unveiling my strategy. But, you know, when Nila voted against Bill 81, she voted against the party lines. There's a lot of things. So we're going to be... It's so complicated to be able to control a narrative and try to, you know, show someone from different lands when the public opinion is so strong. because the government that individual was part of was just, it was just very extremely difficult to deal with, and the party line was extremely hard. So we're going to be working on it. We're going to be putting out sensitive policies. You know, last week we called on Minister LaGrange to scrap the social curriculum and pause the implementation of K-6. I think that's fair to do. There's not enough money. There's not enough time. Teachers are tired, you know. And what we're trying to do really is, and most people don't know me, I like no-nonsense politics. I like to put policies, I like to put out policies that, you know, it's just, it makes sense, right? So that's my approach. So we're going to see where it goes. But so far, so good. The real floating, the real test is going to be tomorrow night and Tuesday night at our launches in Calgary and Edmonton. Because we're, you know, Leela's really coming in a position from, you know, really, she's just really trying to change the conversation. Like, we're looking at what happened in Sundry this weekend. It's just despicable. It's disgusting. It should have never even happened in the first place, either you're conservative or not. You know, and then you're trying to court the sick vote. I don't know what they're thinking, but, you know, they do their thing, we do ours, and we just keep trucking.
Well, I got to say, I really do appreciate the fact that you, I guess, I don't know if let is the right word. Based on my conversation with some of the other campaigns, that seems to be the word that's appropriate. Maybe it's campaign specific. I don't know. But I really appreciate the fact that you let Leela have a conversation with us here, because, you know, I think that... And as well, I appreciate the fact that you were willing to come on and chat tonight a little bit, because
yeah.
One of the things that I think is so critically important that we are missing, which we need, because the polarization that we see that is only worsening, and we're seeing it south of the border, we're also seeing it north of the border, but the polarization that we see where nobody's willing to listen to the possibility that this person may have changed their perspective or their opinion, let alone just have a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
That is so dangerous to me. And it is fueling so much of the situations that we're looking at right now. So I really am grateful. And please pass on to Leela that I really enjoyed the conversation. And there's some, I think people are going to see, she didn't get skate.
She didn't skate. I was in the studio when she, I was in her office, in her private office. It was not the constituency office, everyone. She has a phone set up like this at home. Let's just be clear, because I know that there were rumors that she did just person in her into her constituency office. No, it's not the case. I see that. I could even put a picture. We're working, you know, that's our office.
and for those that listen to or watch the interview, Leela's dog does make a brief appearance in the background. So it's definitely not a constituency.
Was it Elvis or Prince?
I don't know. I just heard the dog barking.
That's probably when I got in. But no, you know, we're really just trying to have, you know, really good conversations. And it's, but I'm going to tell you, I haven't been this tired in a very, very long time. The polarization, and, you know, maybe I'm delusioned. Maybe I'm, you know, I don't know. I'm just really trying to make things better. Let's put it that way. And the past few weeks I've been like, I was just looking at the email. Guys, it's exhausting. Like, I had to kill my notification because I was being slammed in mud this week for standing for abortion. And by some MLAs as well, when they know too well what I did for work in the past. So, you know, it is what it is. It's part of the game. But, you know, keep an eye out. I think it's going to be a good... I think a lot of people will be surprised by policies.
We'll be watching fairly closely to see what they are.
Yeah, it's going to be, get ready. There's another one coming out this week.
I hope you know as well, if you do any dumb shit, we'll make jokes.
Yeah. No, it's like, if we do dumb shit, please let me know. More definitely, than, you know, I've always took account of, you know, I've always been open to that. Like, if I do dumb shit, please let me know. Like, I, to everyone that's been reaching out to me for the past few weeks, and be like, oh, whoa, that's awesome. Oh, you know what? Cool. Okay. You know, maybe that could be a game changer, right? If I do dumb shit, let me know. Send me a DM. I'm going to be taking it in consideration. And really right now, we're just trying to listen to everyone. And that's the approach that we're taking. So we shall see where it's going to take us, my friend.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
I'm retiring for podcasts for a while because I got too much work to do.
That's fair.
But well, there's going to be an event tomorrow night. If you guys want to come say hi.
There's the plug.
We're going to be in temple. No, I'm just saying. I'm going to be wearing a beautiful dress. It's going to be, yeah, Leela picked my outfits. It's at the Temple Community Center. So we'll see if I'm going to make it through the evening.
There we go. Well, thanks so much for taking some time from your busy schedule to chat, Sarah.
Okay, talk to you later. Bye, friend.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. If there's anybody else who wants to weigh in, now is the time. Otherwise, we're going to be shutting it down for this week. And while I wait to see if anybody else wants to speak, I just want to say a big thank you again to everybody who tuned in to listen live tonight. And a big thank you to everybody who's listening to the podcast version of this. We are working on the streaming bit, but we knew that we were going to have the possibility of a couple people speaking, and we haven't yet figured out how to successfully run the audio from the Twitter machine to the streaming software. It's a whole thing, and I'm old and have a hard time learning. So we've got a few folks that are working on navigating that, and hopefully we'll be back with the streaming of the live events as well. But in the meantime, thank you to everybody who's listened to this. Big thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. You're probably going, it's the Patreon supporters that are going to be letting us get the gear to make the noise from the Twitter machine go to the streaming things. So we are still trying to grow and do more. And if you'd like to help in that process, you can always sign up to be one of our Patreon supporters at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab, where for just the cost of a cup of coffee a month, as I use in my SIG every episode, you can help us to buy fancy toys so we can do fancy things. Doesn't look like we have any other speakers tonight. So again, a big thank you to everyone. And again, I know I've been saying this at the end of every one of these live events, but I really want to say it this time in particular. There is so much stuff going on, and people are so hurt and so angry with such good reason. We are seeing some really, really appalling things being done and said. We have to keep talking. And on that note, before I use the line, it looks like we do have one more person who wanted to tag in. So we're going to add Ben. Are you there?
Well, Nate, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
All right. It was a pleasure to hear Sarah again and her new adventures. It just, you know, she did speak about, you know, the state of our politics today. And one particular thing is, you know, social media allows things to be really blown out of every imaginable proportion. And so political parties are having to be extra, extra careful in their vetting. So, yeah, I mean, you'd think that in a few weeks, a vet could be done. But when you have a lot of people interested across a large number of seats, and you consider perhaps that wasn't expected, now that obviously is going to put a strain on resources, and the need to be thorough is important, because, you know, everyone is looking for an I not dotted or a T not crossed somewhere. And, you know, whereas some of the issues are very big, others are minor but blown out of proportion, sucking out a lot of political oxygen. And so parties, understandably, would want to be a little bit more careful and circumspect. And then, of course, there's the unknown factor thrown in there. So all of these, you know, could add to the complications of the nominations process. But hey, Good to hear you talk about it, and hopefully some improvements could be made for everybody concerned, and hopefully our politics can be better. So there you go.
Awesome. Thank you, Ben. I love when you come and speak, because you have such a calm, measured, rational approach to things. And to be clear, I don't think for one second that parties shouldn't be vetting candidates. That's one of the reasons why I brought up the Alberta Party candidate who had an inappropriate relationship with a couple of minors. I think that those things should absolutely be brought to light. The only point that I was trying to highlight with the piece on the NDP is that it is mind-blowing to me, quite frankly, that a party that used to be in government in Alberta hasn't updated their constitution or their bylaws to allow for them to do those things when so many other parties have, because I do think that vetting and a fair vetting process is really important. I think that there's some things that people have said in the past. My personal standpoint has always been that if you say a dumb thing in the past, that's okay, as long as you're willing to acknowledge it and acknowledge that you've learned from it. I don't believe in revisionist history. I don't believe that you just make things go away if you say dumb things, because there's always going to be somebody who remembers. There's always going to be a screenshot, especially in the day and age that we live in. But I think that there is value in saying, hey, you know what? I don't stand by that anymore. I don't believe those things anymore. And I think that it's really important that we allow people to do that, because if we only have people whose lives have been so sheltered that they have never made a mistake running for public office, then we're not going to be getting people who have any kind of lived experience with the kind of things that need the attention from politicians the most. So, yeah, as always, Ben, thank you so much for speaking up. I love hearing your voice, man. Looks like you're the last one this time, so we're going to shut it down there. Thank you, everybody, again, for listening. And as I always like to say, keep the conversation going.